First is from Danny Dawley, looking at the UK health crisis.
Thank you very much. 20 minutes for the health crisis. there we go, it's sorted. I thought of doing a poll of who doesn't know we're in a health crisis, but I won't do that at the same time. Well, I can tell you one person who doesn't know. One person who doesn't know is the Prime Minister. On the 22nd of January this year, the Prime Minister said, "The discrepancy in life expectancy in this country is a disgrace. Nonetheless, it is coming down. And it will come down. Life expectancy overall is at an all-time high." Boris Johnson, January this year. It's not true. Very easy to show it's not true. It is quite possible that Boris doesn't know he is lying. And in a way, one of the reasons why we have had the worst health crisis of any European country since the Second World War may be ignorance, may well be ignorance. I clicked on the Eurostat website, as I always do before I'm about to give a talk, to get the latest statistics, and boy are they quick at Eurostat, because, of course, we're no longer in there. The EU, the EU27, infant mortality rate for the EU27 was 3.6. The latest figure, 2017, has dropped to 3.5. This may help you. You're probably all aware of this, but the EU27 is a far healthier, better place to live than the UK. Infant mortality rate, 3.5. The UK, 3.8, rising to 3.9. We're put next to Ukraine. It's where we now are in those tables. Eurostat very kindly put third nations, Russia and so on, and Belarus, Georgia, Armenia, and the United Kingdom in a helpful little table at the bottom in case our national statisticians fail. So at least Eurostat will carry on producing figures. Let me zip through. I'm not going to show all the slides, and I apologise for the normal thing of having slides that you can't possibly see. Unless you have an amazing eyesight from the front. We still get reports from think tanks. We have this amazing connection of think tanks in London who produce reports. This is November of last year. Saying things like, "No government wants to see the life expectancy of its population fall on its watch. However, the risk of this happening is very real." It has happened. It has happened. So what an Earth for Health think tank is doing, talking about something being a risk, when it has happened, I don't know. The think tank did helpfully produce this diagram. This is age, sex, standardised mortality rates. You can do a sophisticated breakpoint analysis if you want, or you can just use your eyes. Okay? You can see when it began. That's shortly after 2010. Of course, we have to have very complicated statistical models to determine what might the cause of this be, but we have ruled out everything other than austerity. Largely, I can talk about other possibilities, but we have largely ruled it out. Thankfully, Professor Sir Michael Marmot, 2 days ago on the BBC, confirmed, yes, it is austerity, yes, it is a health crisis. Unfortunately, he could have done that a few years ago, and he could have done that at a time when we weren't much more interested in a virus coming out of China, so we couldn't care less, if you like, because actually what we're really scared about is something else. That's flatlining. The 2014 point is the key to know why the Prime Minister lied. That's the age, sex, standardised mortality rate for 2014. You'll notice it is lower than it is now. These are ONS figures. Infant mortality rates. Scotland used to have a higher infant mortality rate than England for decades and decades. Glasgow had the worst rate in the UK and one of the worst rates in Europe. Scotland, since 2014, Scottish Government have been spending a lot of money on infant and child health, and the rate, and it could be entirely coincidental, has dropped from 3.6 to 3.2. It's now at 3.2 still, 2018. If England and Wales had the infant mortality rate of Scotland, 1,745 babies would still almost certainly be alive and be toddlers. Now and that figure rises. But what we get in this country, what's really interesting is it's rather than when infant mortality goes up each year, and ONS say it is a statistically significant rise, we get all kinds of arguments about
comparing like with like.
Yeah, we get all like with like, weeks of gestation, stillbirths, one breath of air. Luckily, they've gone quiet the last 2 years as infant mortality continues to rise in England. The other table there is showing you, yes, the very latest life expectancy is only 4 days below the high point of 2014 for men and 22 days below for women. So we're ever so close to finally getting back to 2014. But of course, we shouldn't be worrying about when will our life expectancy finally actually get above what it was in 2014. We should be worrying about the fact that ONS in December of this year produced the latest projections, which are 2 years lower for both men and women, more than 2 years lower for both men and women, projected forward than the 2016 projections for ONS. Way back then, I and Stuart Geetel-Baston produced a paper saying we've lost 1 million years of life, it's much more now. Finland. I have an obsession with Finland. Finland is the country which has recorded the lowest ever mortality rate, 1.7 deaths per 1,000 live births in 2015. Only 97 children dying in that year, which they're very concerned about in Finland, which is partly why they have the lowest infant mortality rate. Tokyo can kind of beat them, but Tokyo is not a country. ONS helpfully produced endless charts. This is one they produced a few years ago, showing the changes over time. And because you can't see it, I'll just... This is 1990. If I go back to... I was born in 1968. We were very good in 1968. We had some of the first baby incubators. We would be right at the top. But we weren't bad. This is neonatal mortality. We were seventh in the European league table in 1990. By 2015, we dropped to 19th, below countries like Portugal. That's before the absolute rises. That's before things got really, really bad. And this has got the number of infants is small, which is partly why Scotland, by investing money, can actually alter it. It's the easiest thing to alter if you can be bothered. I'll miss out this other to say the other place where infant mortality is rising, life expectancy is falling, is the United States. Somewhat different reasons. We don't have the opiate crisis that they have. But we're similar. This is private school spending. And at the bottom, you've got Chile, which, as you might know, is a country which is now falling apart, Australia, United States, United Kingdom, Colombia. This is a very odd country. This is a country where we segregate our children from other children, where we have ignorance at a scale, certainly in terms of ability at maths, age 24, that you don't find anywhere else in Europe. And we also have very low public spending. This is public spending as a proportion of GDP, now down to 36%. For years and years, Labour would kind of offer to spend about 2% more at most, maybe 1%. So our politics was kind of here. This is Finland, by the way. Here's Germany. What Labour did at the last general election is suggest that within 5 years, it would have been almost impossible, but laudable, I think, within 5 years they were going to pledge to raise that level to just below the German level of public spending. We required more than tax rises on the top 5%. Tax rises on the top 5% would have decimated five times over private school intake, I suspect. Anyway, inconceivable if you happen to be a senior editor at The Guardian, because it would completely alter your way of life. I'll come to the election at the end. But just to say, I mean, not to be cynical about this, for the first time for decades, we actually had an opposition government suggesting doing something which was radically different from the Conservatives, rather than marginally different, which was to move us towards being a normal, boring European country. In Germany, they spend around €1 billion more a week on health than we spend €1 billion. Country spends the most is Switzerland. Finland actually spends slightly less because they're spending on other things, but they're very, very efficient with their spending. Oh, sorry, yes, I should. Lovely little country. This is Ireland. An Ireland that asked advice from George Osborne just before the financial crash. And George said, you should offer to guarantee every bank account. Every bank account. George's family are originally from part of Ireland. So they did, and their GDP, public spending, peaked at around 65% because of bailing out the banks. The Irish banks, the Troika came in, land tax came in. They also made special deals for Amazon and Google in Dublin. Their GDP goes up enormously, not as far as people in Ireland are concerned, but as far as the IMF statistics are concerned. And as their GDP goes up really high, their public spending appears to be ridiculously low at 32%, but that's against the Irish GDP, which is not the real GDP of Ireland. But this is all the crisis. When in Finland the crisis hit, what they did, because GDP fell in Finland as it fell everywhere else, is they actually increased public spending as a proportion of GDP so that services were not reduced. We did the opposite. Our GDP is coming down as our banks crashed then, and we reduced public spending as a proportion of a falling amount of GDP. But, you know, France, Sweden, Italy, this is where you should be. This is, if you actually run an education system that's for everybody, if you're running a health system which is for everybody, if you're concerned about housing, so that people aren't homeless. I'm going to skip that one, that's just a take of the 1% in these different countries. I'm going to skip this, to quote Boris Johnson on the day of the EU referendum, no need for haste. On the day of the referendum, completely scheduled, not a conspiracy, it's when ONS released their annual statistics the day after the result in 2016. That was the biggest rise in deaths. We didn't notice it because we voted to leave Europe. And we didn't notice a lot of what happened after that referendum result because we voted to leave Europe. The increase in deaths was blamed on all kinds of things. It was blamed on cold winters. The most dramatically warm series of winters this country has ever had in its history have occurred since 2010. Not a single cold winter. We blamed it on influenza. This is what an influenza epidemic looks like. At the bottom of weeks, short, sharp. Could be about to experience one. Or something similar. Anyway, there wasn't a special kind of influenza that only affected the English and the Welsh and didn't affect people in France, the Netherlands, Scandinavia, Germany. Because of, somebody was talking earlier about Farr, because of Farr and then there's other Victorians who did such a good job, we've got records that go back to the 1830s that are pretty decent on mortality. The worst years for mortality were 1918, influenza, and the end of the war, 1940, that's the war and the deaths and the bombing and the Blitz. 1929, which was a very cold winter, and of course the crash. 1895 was called the Great Frost. You notice how long ago these are. 1846, snow was mentioned earlier. Cholera, 1849. Cholera, 2015. Right, in the league table of worst years since we started recording. Skip that. Coming up today, this is March 2019. These are figures from the Institute of Actuaries showing the falling life expectancy of 65-year-old men and women. Pension funds have done really well out of this. Huge billions and billions of write-offs from private pension funds. And this is important, private pension funds. So this is not just affecting poor people. We know, and of course the actuaries have the best data of all for these people. We know the life expectancy. You're looking about 2 years and still coming down on those projections. How do we report it? And I think this is really maybe the most interesting thing for this conference, isn't the thing that's happened. I've now done 100 talks since 2012 on this. I must have published 30 papers. There are over 1,000 academic papers. There are more coming out. There's one in The Lancet out this week about DWP, cause and effect, actual beginning to get proof of these things. So it's just, the interesting thing is the story. Why has the story not been reported, given that the story is such an obvious story? The only similar story to this, just outside Europe, is Russia after 1989. And that was more dramatic. The increased deaths in Russia after 89 was higher. The BBC ran the story in June. The stats come out every June. UK population growth stalls, official estimates show. They're more worried about the migration data than death data. And then they quoted a spokesman from the lobby group Population Matters, which you may be familiar with, used to be called the Optimum Population Trust. And they're trying to be cosier with their name. He said, our already unsustainable population is continuing to rise and will continue until a positive strategy is put into place to address the rise in the population. We have too many people. So it's great that we're being as obnoxious as possible to our fellow Europeans, and point-based systems are really good, but actually, you know, that mortality, that's quite helpful, isn't it? Because we've got too many people. And I've come to the conclusion that the deaths in the last 10 years are equivalent to the 1980s adage that unemployment was a price worth paying at the time. I do not think this would have happened if it wasn't the very quietly whispered belief amongst people in power that a few people dying at 81 rather than 83 or dying at 75 rather than 77 might be a bit sad, but and in the House of Commons, when I was showing the infant mortality figures, I sat next to an MP who said, but Danny, it's only 3.9 per thousand. It's really low. Price worth paying. Why spend more on midwives and incubators? All you're going to do is move that 3.9 to 3.2. Guardian. How did the Guardian lead with the story from the middle of last year? At 275,000, the net immigrants was 6,000 higher than the average for the past 5 years. The Express reported a surge the equivalent of adding a city the size of Coventry. ONS, bless them, now released such detailed data that for a single year of age for Coventry, we can know every migrant to Coventry, every death to Coventry. I won't go through it, but the real story about Coventry is why there's so many more people die in Coventry, not this typical people coming in the size of Coventry. I'll show you this as a graph in a minute, but this is the very latest data. We'll get the next in June. It gets later as ONS struggle. Thankfully, that's not into July yet, but the mid-year estimates are tricky. The red means that the mortality rate's going up by age group. This is for men, and that's for women. There's slides on my website if you're fascinated by this. The graph makes it more obvious. This is absolute. Biggest for the 90-pluses, then the 85 to 89s, then the 80 to 84s. Some randomness. I don't think there's any golden cohort going on. It's the frail. It's people with Alzheimer's and dementia dying earlier than people with Alzheimer's and dementia died 10 years ago. It's single women on their own. People who rely on adult social services, which already by 2014, the number of visitors have been cut. People are relying on Meals on Wheels, people feeling a general sense of despair, people relying on rural bus services, people being kept alive in care homes, where the care home can no longer employ suitably qualified staff and is employing people who have another job during the day to work at night and have no idea what they're doing. All of this is very, very hard to prove, but you can knock out all the other possibilities.
Have you published the data about
in the New Statesman. In the New Statesman in February 2014, right. 6 years ago. And of course, since then, hundreds of articles, academic articles by many, many academics, on the proof of these. One really important thing is the age of these people. Because the bulk of the increase in mortality is, as you can see, people in their 80s, some in their 90s. This is not the left behind areas. If you look at a map of where 80-year-old and 90-year-olds in Britain live, it is mainly in the southeast, a lot around the south coast. And if you look at the social class profile, these are people who were middle age, middle class in the 1980s. There are people who voted conservative. Okay, you can work that out. It's not an ecological fallacy to work it out. Go on.
There's a blip at 70 to 74. Is that easily explained?
Not necessarily, and it's different from the year before, so it may not be.
That's age group, not year, isn't it?
That's age group, 70 to 74. The one we have to watch out for around that age are people who've retired to Spain and Crete and so on, and whether some of them start, not yet, but we should probably expect a blip in the other direction soon. 1 minute. Because only the people who are ill are going to come back. Okay, you'll stay in Spain if you're well. 1 minute. ONS data, change in life expectancy for women, only to 2016, but as we get it for 2017, we know already this will get worse and worse. Occasionally another country like Spain or Australia gets a one-year blip that's small. We're the only one now going into the red and solidly into the red. The only equivalent is Japan, way back in 2010, 2011. That's a tsunami. That's tsunami deaths. If you want an idea of the scale of this, at that point it was still just a third of a tsunami. And equivalent for men, and it's got worse in the UK, this is all the data ONS produce, is 70% of the tsunami, because men in Japan were less likely to be at home when the weather waves hit at the time. But that's the nearest equivalent event, if you like, to what's occurred. Only three slides to go. There's an irony about the general election. This is my attempt, using a couple of surveys, to divide the population into 66 1 million square groups. We have 66 million people in the country. The children didn't vote. The black squares are people who live in Britain but couldn't vote because they're not UK citizens. Labour, very popular amongst the young, actually goes all the way up. You can still get 1 million in late 50s, 60s voting Labour. Greens to nearest million, and Plaid around about there. You don't get your first 1 million Tories until you get to age 43. And the Conservative votes down there. Something quite remarkable about those who voted this government in, and those who are most affected by this, are those who are voting for the future of their grandchildren. My summary at the last election, old people are voting because they want their grandchildren to have the kind of future that they had as a past, where they could start a family in their 20s, where they could get a home, where they had a permanent job, where they had things getting better, where they had a health service getting better and better, where they had the lowest infant mortality rate on the planet. So there's an irony to it. My last two slides are just pictures. This is the gates of Trinity College, Cambridge. I took this in the early morning of springtime. The richest college in the UK, and at the front you can just see the tents of the homeless people who now are camped outside Trinity College, Cambridge. In December, a woman who was homeless gave birth to two twins just on the street outside there, which made the news for a little bit. And that's the gates of Trinity College, Oxford, and again there's a tent of somebody outside. The country is falling apart in a way that no other country has been falling apart in Europe. You see the falling apart most of all in terms of health. There is no sign yet of it stopping or slowing. And on top of everything else, we have a virus coming that, even if we're lucky and the effects are mild, it will divert attention from the normal care of people and result in more deaths of people who don't touch the virus whatsoever. When the crisis was last this bad, we, for 3 months, ended all routine operations in all English NHS hospitals. And that didn't actually help reduce the numbers. I'm sure it would have been worse if they hadn't done that. But on a Monday morning, in a large hospital, the one I know well is the JR in Oxford, people bring their relatives that they've managed to keep alive over the weekend, and they dump them at the front of the hospital, and the trolleys now go all the way back through the ambulance car park of people just waiting to die. And that is where we are. What does Boris say? Apart from the fact that it's better than ever and we'll get better and there's nothing to worry about, he will build 40 new hospitals. Some of them will be very small, some of them will come very late, and it isn't actually hospitals you need. It's too late by the time you've got people into hospitals. This will have to end eventually. It always does. There always comes a time when these blips in history. It's a very long and very big blip. When they come out and tail out and people eventually realise, what worries me most is that when we have infant mortality rising, we argue about whether it's rising or not, rather than why it's rising. Or we blame individual health authorities, Kent, a particular hospital, when it's happening nationally. When we have mortality rising for old people, or the worst one, I'll end on the worst one. What did the BBC do after reporting Marmot two nights ago? And they did it at the 1 o'clock news, they did it at the 6 o'clock news, and they repeated it again at the 10 o'clock news. They showed their reporter from a small town, I think near Bolton, who had gone to a primary school teacher, and the primary school teacher was teaching the children, 5, 6, 7 year olds, how to go and tell their parents and grandparents to try to be healthier because it was their fault that they were dying earlier. So a new level of blame the victim. Don't just blame the victim. Tell the victim's grandchildren how lazy and feckless their grandparents are at school. I'll end it there. Thank you.